Owen Flanagan isn't afraid to ask the really big questions. As a leading philosopher of mind, he's investigated what's called the hard problem of consciousness, trying to explain how the neurons in our brains can create our rich inner lives. Now he's written a book called The Really Hard Problem, Meaning in a Material World. Flanagan told Steve Paulson that he is an unabashed atheist. He's also a scholar of religion. In fact, he's talked at length with the Dalai Lama about the connections between Buddhism and science. But what if you don't believe in God, the supernatural, or any kind of non-material reality? How can you find deep meaning in your own life? That's the philosophical problem that Owen Flanagan has set out to explore.
It seems to me, if I look back over the history of not only Western culture, but of civilizations in the East, people from the very beginning of time have been wondering about such questions as, what's it all about? Why am I here? How do I make sense of this? And there are elaborate stories, myths, histories, all kinds of art forms, as well as philosophy and religious literature that address this question. So I think it's the big existential problem that all humans at all times face.
And there's a religious response to this, which is that without God, we're left with no meaning in our lives.
Exactly.
How do you respond to that?
Well, there certainly are religious answers to this question about life's meaning. The ones that we're most familiar with, or that I'm most familiar with in the West, come from the religions of Abraham, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And they will tend to suggest that, first of all, God, at the beginning of time, created the universe with a plan. And we achieve that plan by living in accordance with God's law, in particular by living in a moral way. And then we reap the rewards afterwards. The problem with thinking that we need that kind of story, I think, comes from work that I'd like to do on comparative philosophy and cross-cultural stuff. Now, what's interesting about both the Buddhist and the Confucian tradition is they're not religious in the sense in which we tend to think about religions.
Right. They don't have the God in the Abrahamic sense.
Exactly. So the Buddhists actually are either quietistic or atheistic by our standards. So one question would be, insofar as some people, many people, actually we should say, at many times have invented consoling spiritual stories, it may be a deep-seated human need, but one question we face again and again is, are these stories rational? Do we really need them? And it seems to me the evidence is, from those non-Abrahamic traditions, that many people get away without believing in a god. In Confucianism, you'll read reference to Tian, which is translated as heaven very often, but it's pretty clear that this is an impersonal, the sum of all the things that there are. Many Hindus I know, Hindus of course do have creator gods and lower gods, many Hindus I know all about Brahman and Vishnu and Krishna, but if I ask them, do you believe in them, they say, no, of course not.
Now just to be clear, you are an atheist, you are a hardcore materialist. Why are you so sure there's no transcendent or supernatural reality?
I'm actually not so sure that there's no transcendent reality. What I do think is intellectually responsible is that if a person comes up with a conception of a deity or deities, I want to hear about it. And it's almost always the case that there are stronger reasons not to believe in it than to believe in it. This is related to a comment that Richard Dawkins has made. Everybody is an atheist with respect to most gods that have ever been invented. So, for example, most of us don't believe in Zeus. Most of us don't believe in Krishna and Vishnu. The people who do believe in Krishna and Vishnu and Brahman don't believe in Allah, don't believe in Yahweh, don't believe in God the Father. But here's another argument with that conception of God. If you ask people in the Abrahamic tradition, tell me about your God, they'll say he's the omni-God. He's all good, he's all loving, he's all just, and so on. Then there's a nice argument, which I think theologians take seriously sometimes. It goes like this. If God is all loving, he should want to abolish evil. If God is all powerful, he can abolish evil. But evil exists, both natural evil and human-caused evil. Therefore, God is either not all loving, not all powerful, or none of the above. So that's my tactic, Steve. If someone says to me, you're an atheist, I say, actually, tell me about your God. If it's Zeus, I'll give you some arguments about that. If it's Brahman, I'll give you some arguments about that. If it's the Judeo-Christian God, I'll give you some arguments about that. So you can keep bringing them on. I do like gods, just like Einstein said. If he was a theist, he actually has nice things to say about Buddhism, but he says if he was a theist, he would believe in Spinoza's God, and Spinoza's God famously was God or nature, call it what you will, but God is certainly not personally interested in human affairs, and that's what I think is the best view to have right now.
Now, you've said that the hardest problem that we face is living meaningfully, but it seems like there are some simple responses to this. We all find meaning in our own ways, whether it's through raising our children or doing work that we think makes the world a better place, or by marveling at a sunset or being kind to our friends and neighbors. Are you saying we need something more than our own private construction of meaning?
That's a great question, Steve. Maybe. I'm not sure how I feel about that. Let's put it this way. The examples you gave are things that most everyone would say are genuinely meaningful. It looks like it's a quirky feature of the universe and our kind of social animal that being in loving relations with other people, including a certain amount of altruism and philanthropy outside the family, more often than not makes people feel better than they would think it would.
Okay. That sounds like a fairly reasonable response, hardly a deep philosophical problem then. But it seems like you think it's actually more difficult than that. From a philosophical perspective, there are actually hard questions to wrestle with here.
Actually, I don't always like it when philosophers are supposed to go deeper and deeper and deeper, because sometimes there are answers to questions about important things which are staring us in the face. But I guess I would say that, yes, most people pay lip service to the idea that love and friendship are important. Most people, though, in this country are extremely devout, and they seem to believe things. I think this would have political implications. For example, people believe such things as that I accomplish what I accomplish because of my chutzpah, my hard work, my conscientious intelligence, and I get to keep what I have. Well, this is a major denial, I think, of other deep points such as luck and life circumstances. A quarter of the people on Earth right now live, according to the World Bank, in a situation of absolute poverty, and rich nations don't do enough for them. We don't do enough for our own people in this country, and it's just luck that puts other people there.
I want to ask a bit about your own background. Weren't you actually raised in a Catholic family?
I was. I was raised in a good old sort of Irish Catholic. After the Second World War, my dad came back. We settled in the suburbs of New York. I, in fact, went to Catholic schools all the way through college, actually. I went to a boys' Catholic high school after elementary school with nuns. And I had a great education at Fordham University in New York.
So when did you lose your faith in God?
I was about six.
So you went through all these Catholic schools, including a Catholic college, and you didn't believe in God during...
It never interfered with my lifestyle or belief. I mean, it's interesting. How shall I say it? I was the oldest of six children. Both my parents were wonderful people, but my dad was a hellfire and brimstone sort of Catholic. His father had died when he was young. My dad at 17 was a lieutenant in Patton's army. So he was all stick and no carrot, and I understood the Catholic Church to be that way too. And I realized early on that they were down about things like things that sounded fun. and I also was, at that time, it's related to the problem of evil, I was very aware of the fact that if God was, as I had heard he was, he punished children for bad things and let them burn in hell for all eternity. And I actually started to lapse right then. I thought that a good God would not be like that.
So would you say you have a spiritual life now?
You know, people tell me that on these dating service sites, the most popular answer among educated people when they ask you religious denomination is spiritual but not religious.
And do you fit into that category?
I don't go on those sites. I tend to say that because I certainly think that the method of trying to find meaning in a material world that involves narrow egoism and believing that I am the only thing and I'm the only thing that matters doesn't work for me, but doesn't work for almost anyone.
Do you carry out any practices that I guess we would call spiritual? For instance, do you meditate?
I've been known to meditate. Since my early childhood, I understand as a first-pass aesthetic. When I was a little boy, we did the Latin Mass with incense and things like that. and I was a major altar boy in the ranking of altar boys. So I liked the Latin mass. I liked all the glamour and the smells and things like that. And I still like Buddhist practices. I like actually any kind of religious practices, like being in Indian mud huts. I like being alone on mountaintops. I like sunsets, all the usual things for generating aesthetic experiences. But yes, I have practiced Buddhist meditation.
Well, you also write that sacred music, pieces like Bach's Mass in B minor or Handel's Messiah, can move you in ways that non-sacred music does not.
Exactly.
Which is interesting. I mean, it's interesting to think about that. I mean, it raises the question of whether you are having some kind of religious experience when you listen to those pieces of music.
Right. Well, I certainly would say I'm having, in one sense, transcendental with a small t, spiritual with a small s, unusual with a big U, if you want it, experiences at those points in time. What I would not want to say is that I'm getting in touch with something which is immaterial. That's all I would want to say. I mean, I'm in touch with something which is deep, something I'm really enjoying, something which seems to me to put me in a place where I can be serene or thrilled, depends on the music, and I love it, yes.
Owen Flanagan, talking with Steve Paulson. Flanagan is a philosopher at Duke University. His book is called The Really Hard Problem, Meaning in a Material World.